Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
It's the 10-day festivities in Iran, marking the victory of Islamic Revolution 43 years ago. The country has been through thick and thin in the past four decades, facing an imposed war and most cruel sanctions ever imposed on any country in the world. Now, among the accomplishments of the revolution, as Iran's leader has put, mention can be made of achieving independence, safeguarding the country's territorial integrity, the elevation of Iran's status on the international scale, the promulgation of free thinking, and the growth of spirituality.
43 years ago, millions of Iranians flocked to Tehran's Mehrabad airport to welcome the late founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, back to the country after 14 years of exile. The historic day was a milestone that put an end to centuries of monarchy in Iran. Ever since, Iranians have celebrated the occasion every year for 10 days. The event starts on the anniversary of Imam Khomeini's homecoming and culminates on the anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution. This period is called Dehe Fajr, or the 10-day dawn. As with every year, the ceremonies began with a visit by leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, to Imam Khomeini's mausoleum. The mausoleum also hosted state officials and people from all walks of life to mark the occasion.
Like every year, we gather today in this holy place to pay respect to Imam Khomeini, a man who changed the course of history in our country and established a political system that respects our beliefs as Muslims.
Today is an important day for us. We, the new generation, were not present those days, but we participate in this ceremony to learn about the personality of Imam Khomeini.
The Islamic Revolution was led by Imam Khomeini, who spent some 14 years in exile in Iraq, Turkey, and France, from where he led a swelling grassroots movement, which ultimately led to the toppling of former Iranian monarch Mohammad Reza Pahlavi. The revolution was driven by anti-imperialist sentiments, since Mohammad Reza Pahlavi was believed to be heavily dependent on Western powers, especially the U.S.
During the Shah period, other countries like the U.S. made decisions for us. Iran was a U.S. colony. They were in our country to plunder our oil and other resources.
We lost many of our beloved ones for the sake of the Islamic Republic. By celebrating the event, we seek to say no to foreign interference in our country. We still stick to those ideals, no matter how much pressure and sanctions the U.S. imposes on our nation.
Less than 2 months after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, Iranians took part in a referendum, where more than 98% of eligible voters voted yes to the Islamic Republic as a new political system.
To Iranians, the 10-day dawn is reminiscent of their struggle for independence, a legacy that they're not willing to give up on, even if it means they have to endure U.S. sanctions. Now, one of the major goals of holding such massive celebrations is to pass on these messages to new generations. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Now, welcome to the Spotlight. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi, and these are our guests for this edition. We'll have Abulfaz Sajidi, Islamic studies researcher in the Iranian city of Qom. Also joining us in this edition will be Masoud Shajar, the head of the Islamic Human Rights Commission in London.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Gentlemen, welcome to the show. Let me start with Mr. Sajidi. First things first, let's begin with a look at the roots of the Islamic Revolution in Iran and how it all began. Let our viewers know, what was it that made Iranian people to stand up and topple the Pahlavi regime?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Congratulations on the anniversary of the victory of Islamic Revolution of Iran and the arrival of Imam Khomeini in Iran. The root of revolution is value and Islamic understanding. People in Iran were under the pressure of injustice from Pahlavi regime, who was under the control of USA. You know, as previously, we see that always USA and some foreign countries, they wanted to use Iran for their own benefit. And because of that, we see in Iran, Imam Khomeini started to give enough information to people to understand what is the value of justice, what is the value of morality. Because of, on the one hand, they had in the under the pressure of economical pressure, political pressure, and on the other hand, they saw that Islamic ruling are not applied in the society, rather they are not free to apply them. They are not free to even, they have their own ceremony. The politicians, they were arising, and they, you know, because of that, they saw that even for the Muharram, they were not free to do their ceremony. So these various aspects of these attacks against Muslims and against this community, Muslim community. So we see that Imam Khomeini started saying that we should be a free country, we should use our own benefit, our own economic, we should make our economic, we should try to develop our country, to use our youth and every capital that we have for our own benefit. So because these limitations, because of these problems that they had, they started to have the revolution. You see, because of that, actually, if we want to analyze our Islamic revolution right now, if we want, we must examine Iran with the condition of the external enemies and the internal companions of those enemies. So even at the at that time, and also still, we see the continuation of those unfair and ruthless activity. Right now, unfortunately, still we have an unfair and ruthless enemies. So if we want to analyze our revolution, and we are to understand what we have obtained through this revolution, first,
Let's come to that point at a later time. Let's you just start about the roots, and then we'll go ahead chronologically. Sorry for the interruption. Mr. Shahjadeh, one major achievement of Iran's Islamic Revolution was gaining true independence from all others and trying to stand on its own feet in the presence of myriad of plots and conspiracies coming its way. Don't you agree?
Absolutely. I think the at the heart of the revolution was to free the nation and its population from colonial sort of interest and oppression, which was done through agents like Shah. You know, very much like what is happening now in the region, in Saudi Arabia, in Emirates. You know, individual dictators are doing the bidding of the colonial powers and oppressors for their interests and undermining the interests of their own citizens. this was a revolution to free and give independence and give people power back to the people with and through Islamic understanding. In some ways, it was also revival of Islam and Islam and Muhammadi as a sort of concept which liberating the people, empowering people, and indeed dictating and facilitating political, social, economical aspect. You know, let us remember, before the Islamic Revolution, Islam was being seen as an outdated ideology which only belongs to the past. What happened at the time of revolution, it wasn't what happened just in Iran, but right across the globe, there was a tsunami of people an ideology to address the needs and aspiration, all needs and aspiration, political, economical, social needs of aspiration, not of just Muslims, but others. In South America, people were carrying the pictures of Imam Khomeini, and they were identifying with this uprising against the hegemony, U.S. hegemony, which has been oppressing people.
Right.
And I think that is really, and Imam said very clearly, to be free, you first have to free your own mind. So decolonizing your mind, empowering, and indeed getting confidence to stand up for your principles was part of this revolution.
Okay. Now, Mr. Sajidi, let's now draw a comparison between Iran's Islamic Revolution and also the revolutions elsewhere in the world. What is it that makes Iran's Islamic Revolution distinct from other revolutions elsewhere?
Well, actually, there are various differentiations we can make here. One is that Islamic Revolution was based on Islamic ideas. They wanted to be able to apply Islamic law in their societies. They want to achieve morality according to what Islam says. They want to achieve Islamic lifestyle. They want to have the culture, make their culture according to Islamic values. So one point is that this revolution is Islamic revolution. So because of that, Islam means that the culture, the economy, politics, and the social relations, families, education, all these aspects, they wanted to base according to Islamic law and according to Islamic advices. According to Islam, we should, for example, prefer the spirituality over, for example, other aspects. So the spirituality and morality should be growth, we should have a kind of progress in this aspect. So one aspect is the Islamic aspect. And the most of values that we have in Islam, they are human values. There are not something different from others. Rather, according to Islam, we want to refer to our revelation. We want to have our sample and our model, the Ahlul Bayt, Imams, the Holy Prophet, the Imam Hussein, Imam Mahdi, and all infallible Imams. So they should be considered as our model. They are the person who has the best level of morality. So we want to have religion in our life, not only just once a month, for example, once a day we think for our relation to God. No, we want to bring God always to our society. So marriage, social contract, everything, they want to do it according to what Islam says.
Okay. Now, Mr. Shajira, as you know, Iran has been subject to severe Western sanctions all these years, that affecting all aspects of life. And still, lots of scientific and technological advancements have been made, for instance, in nuclear and nanotechnologies, among other things. So what's the secret for this success?
Well, the secret for success is independence, is empowerment, is liberation. And liberation in all aspects. You know, you were saying about different revolutions. Some revolutions was because of sort of reaction against class system. Some were for economical reasons. Islamic revolution was extremely balanced, and it was empowering all people. And, you know, after the revolution, the whole sort of direction of the society changed in such a way which has not been seen anywhere else. And it's that sort of aspect of it which empowered people to achieve all the achievements despite all the sanctions. I mean, really, to achieve what Iran has achieved technologically, it itself on its own is quite a sort of remarkable. But to do it despite all the sanctions, despite the fact that, you know, let's be clear, the whole world united against Iran. The imposed war of Iraq wasn't just Iraq imposing war. It was a whole world. All the Western and Eastern, the Arabs and everyone was involved in supporting Saddam. Despite all that, the victory came to the Iranian nation. And since then, with all the sanctions, as you said, you know, Iran has achieved in such a remarkable way that is really it's unbelievable. You know, in the field of education, in the field of empowerment of the women, there are more women in our universities as lecturers and scientists and professors than is in most of the Western world. You know, you could go through all the achievements in all different levels, and you come to the only understanding that all this was as a result of people saying no to the colonialism of United States and neo-colonialism, and getting independent and starting relying on themselves with the huge confidence which Islam has brought to them.
Right. Now, Mr. Sajidi, on the international front, Iran today is boasting of a lofty position and a status in the world, especially in the West Asia region, as a major player. It's offering assistance to regional countries like it helped Iraq defeat Daesh and others. Those countries are asking for it. Iran is offering them assistance. And Iran is also a source of inspiration for some other countries. Like Mr. Chatter just mentioned, Latin American countries. Let's have your thoughts on these aspects.
Yes, actually, I think you know, when we want to analyze Iran, we should understand the present situation, and we should take into consideration the particular condition that we have. And yes, Iran, on the one hand, we had the Daesh, and Iran tried to remove this obstacle, but unfortunately we see, for example, someone like Soleimani, the martyr Soleimani, has been, we see the sanction of this Soleimani on Instagram and all other mass media. So there is not a kind of justice in the world, unfortunately, against Iran. We see the chemical attack during the 8-year war. Right now we see that the vaccine and the drug and medicine, they are the sanction of medicine, the sanction of drug, you know, the sanction of vaccine. These are not something understandable. How we can analyze them according to human understanding? You know, right now we see an extensive cultural war against Iran using cyberspace tools against Iran. We see in such a situation, actually we see that all countries, they are little to little, they are trying to understand Iran. I want to mention an When I was in Canada, there were mass media against Iran so heavy that once when I participated in a demonstration of votes in Canada, I saw one of my classmates who was in Canada, I saw that he also participated in the demonstration. I asked him that, what is the reason that you are participating in such a ceremony? He said, since I had tendency to understand political issues, when I saw that there are so many propaganda against Muslims, against Hezbollah, against Iran,
right.
I was sensitive to understand. Then I tried to discover, I understood that the truth is vice versa.
Okay.
So if they want to understand Iran also, they are trying to understand in such a way.
Right.
So we are not deep with such, we should say that we are facing an unfair and ruthless enemy right now.
Okay. Now, Mr. Shanjana, let's talk a little bit about the way that America has been treating Iran in all those years, since the very first day after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, and cite reasons for Tehran having difficulty in trusting Washington's intentions.
Well, I think anywhere around the world, people should not trust U.S. intention. U.S. is a power, it's a hegemony that oppresses others for the benefit of not just Americans, but the benefit of few in America. I mean, let's face it, United States even oppresses its own people. When you have a situation that 1% of the population owns 85% of power, resources, and the wealth, that means that 99% are being oppressed by that 1%. And the system is geared, system has been fixed to enable this injustice to take place day in, day out. So, you know, this the system in the United States, the legal system, the policing, all these structures are geared, are massaged, are actually created to create and continue that oppression of even Americans, majority Americans. When it comes outside of United States, you know, they use the excuses of we want democracy, and then they promote the apartheid system of Israel or the dictatorship of Saudi Arabia and UAE, when these guys are actually killing each other and their own family, imprisoning them, and there's no democracy, there is no justice.
Okay.
Really, I think I think Iran should be proud that has got United States as an opponent.
Okay.
And I think Iran...
Shajira, we're out of time, unfortunately. I got to jump in. That's all the time we have. I apologize for that. Abu Fath Sajjadi, Islamic studies researcher, join me from Guam, and Master Chajra, head of the Islamic Human Rights Commission from London, with their contribution. So I've been your host, Behrouz Najaf, and I'll see you next time.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked in
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Rafi'i. Please stay tuned.
برادران عزیز، خواهران گرامی، من فهرستوار فقط براتون میشمارم.
Dear brothers and sisters in faith, today I want to enumerate the positive effects of marriage. The first one is peace of soul. The second one is keeping the satanic desires away from you. The third effect is establishing a kind of social status for you. The fourth one is accountability. This means that by marriage people become responsible. The fifth effect is the financial independence one might find. It is true that the financial expenses of a married couple is more than a single one. However, marriage brings a type of economic independence for you. The next effect of marriage is boosting the amount of spiritual reward. You know that even the quality of the salah of a married person is different from that of a single one, because the Satan is far away from the married person. The next effect is having descent and pure offsprings and increasing the Muslim population. Social security is another kind of positive effect of establishing a family, because through marriage, the out-of-wedlock relations will decrease and people might be safe from deviations. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Rafi'i. To find out more about this program, log on to our website www.parstoday.com Call of Islam page. We'll leave you in Allah's care.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Yemeni health workers have staged a demonstration inside the Ministry of Health in Yemen's capital Sana'a to warn that over 300 health facilities are on the verge of collapse due to the severe fuel shortage. They slammed the continued detention of Yemeni oil vessels by Saudi Arabia and its allies.
The health sector is suffering greatly due to the lack of fuel, as health officials suffer from a shortage in electrical power generations to save the lives of thousands of patients. Intensive care units, oxygen factories, operation rooms, emergency rooms, and other divisions will stop, and this is a crime against the Yemeni people. Unfortunately, the international community remains silent about what is happening. The United Nations has failed to fulfill its duties.
The Ministry of Health has called on the international community to step in and pressure the Saudi-led coalition to release the detained oil vessels and save the lives of thousands of Yemeni patients who may lose their lives as a result of the Saudi blockade on the country.
Banning the entry of fuel ships and piracy on Yemeni oil ships lead to a health catastrophe, as hospitals and health centers are in constant need of fuel. The interruption means that health services will stop working. Some patients come from other governorates to get treatment in Sana'a, such as cancer patients, and the fuel crisis will make their transportation even more difficult. We warn of an imminent health disaster and call on the international community to do its part to save the lives of thousands of Yemeni patients, including children.
Recently, the member of Yemen's negotiating delegation Abdul Malik al-Hajri passed away of kidney failure as he could not travel abroad for treatment due to the continued closure of Sana'a International Airport that comes as Saudi Arabia and its allies have imposed an all-out blockade on Yemen since March 2015.
The lives of thousands of Yemeni patients, including children, are in danger amid the absence of essential healthcare services. Unfortunately, the inaction of the international community towards the catastrophic situation in Yemen is emboldening the Saudi-led coalition to further continue its crimes in the war-ravaged country. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Omani Foreign Minister Badr al-Busaidi met Syrian President Bashar al-Assad in Damascus. The two sides discussed bilateral relations and recent regional developments. During the talks, Assad referred to both countries' mutual understanding of regional issues, asserting that Arabs need to conduct realistic dialogue and set up necessary bases for political relations among each other. He stressed that developments in the Arab world require a change of their political approach.
For his part, Busaidi conveyed to Assad greetings of the Omani Sultan, underlining Syria's strong and brave stances in facing regional challenges.
We look forward to strengthen our economic, trade and political relations. I discussed in detail such relations with my Syrian counterpart. There are efforts made by many countries currently to bring Arabs together, correct mistakes of the past and adopt a more futuristic vision for Arab cooperation in order to overcome the past.
For his part, Syrian Foreign Minister underlined the significance of collaboration with Oman for bringing Arabs together.
The meeting was an opportunity to discuss joint Arab action and solidarity, as well as establishing the best relations among Arab states in order to correct previous mistakes and build the future. Syria and Oman formed together a force for underlining the importance of a united Arab stance to overcome challenges facing our countries and peoples.
Oman has been working for years on alleviating tension between Arab countries, mainly with regards to Syria. He arrived in Damascus coming from Kuwait, where Arab foreign ministers were meeting. The significance of Oman's strategy towards Syria is that it did not sever its ties, as many Arab countries did during the crisis. The visit comes as Arab countries are gradually restoring relations with Syria following the victory of the country's government against terror. Muhammad Ali, Damascus.
Israeli forces have escalated their arrest campaigns throughout the occupied territories, detaining dozens of Palestinians in raids across the occupied West Bank early Monday. The Palestinian Prisoner Society revealed that the arrests were made mainly in Ain al-Sultan camp in Ariha, also known as Jericho, and Al-Jalazon refugee camp in Ramallah, as well as in a number of villages west of the city. The society accused Israel of trying to find different excuses to raid Palestinian areas. This time, the Israeli army announced that its forces operating in the West Bank were exposed to fire more than once by Palestinian resistance fighters.
The reasons behind arresting Palestinians this time are many and different, and the goal is to drain the energy of the Palestinian people, in which they won't resist Israel, the occupation. The Israeli tries through detention to convince the people that there is no way to achieve victory.
Israeli forces continue to storm Palestinian villages and cities on a daily basis under the excuse of arresting Palestinian activists. In the village of Qatani, northwest occupied Al-Quds, two Palestinians were shot and seriously wounded before they were detained.
These campaigns are part of Israeli oppression that aims at breaking the Palestinian resistance to occupation, but they will not succeed. And in my opinion, all these arrests reflect the crisis of the Israeli system that does not understand that Palestinians will never give up.
Palestinians warn that Israel's escalated crackdown against the activists and the use of excessive force is meant to fight the Palestinian resistance. They see the operations as a failed attempt to intimidate the youth into giving up resistance. Israel holds thousands of Palestinians, including women and minors, in jail. Israel intensifies its arrest campaigns against Palestinians under the pretext of a policy known as mowing the lawn, which is aimed at re-arresting Palestinian activists to prevent any forms of resistance. Experts say these detentions remain as part of Tel Aviv's perpetual war against the Palestinians. Mona Qandil, occupied Ramallah.
In honor of tens of athletes and sporting clubs, the Global Campaign to Return to Palestine held the International Forum to honor anti-normalization athletes under the slogan Al-Quds Golden Medal in the Lebanese capital, Beirut.
We are honoring these champions from Iran and different Arab countries because they refuse to play against an Israeli player because they don't recognize the so-called Israel. They paid a heavy price for that. We look at them as heroes.
Fathi Nourin, an Algerian and world champion who pulled out of four different competitions after finding out he would compete with an Israeli competitor, was punished by the International Judo Federation, which withdrew his Olympics accreditation. He noted that nothing is more significant than Palestine.
For us as athletes in Algeria, nothing is more valuable than the Palestinian cause, which is the cause of all Arabs and Muslims. And we are in solidarity with them and back them in any way we can. We have the chance to send a message to the world and raise awareness through sports about the Israeli terrorism, since the Israelis have been trying to win recognition through sports competitions, and we can through sports show the truth.
The athletes who were honored through their matches in international and regional tournaments to protest the presence of Israeli players or teams. Two chess players also had their share of a gold medal. So did 14-year-old Mauritanian Mohammed Abdulrahman.
There was like three people that qualified from Africa, and I qualified. And during that tournament, it was the last round, I played against this Israeli guy. And I just didn't play since it's a common gesture, and I stand with Palestine.
The global campaign to return to Palestine stressed that they wanted to launch this initiative to show that these athletes who paid a price, whether being dismissed from international tournaments or deprived of important medals and valuable prizes, have won people's respect for their stance in defense of Palestine and the culture of resistance. These athletes said they decided to rescind an international competition and prize if it meant recognizing Israeli occupation and apartheid state. Yet little did they know that by so doing, they became champions for millions of hearts across the Arab and Muslim worlds. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
What often passes for cultured Parisian cool has been exposed as deadly indifference to suffering humanity following the death of René Robert, a famous photographer of flamenco music. The 85-year-old fainted while on a walk in one of the most crowded areas of Paris. He couldn't get up and then tragically died of hypothermia after being ignored for 9 hours. The death has shocked France and has shamed the capital city in news worldwide. Robert died likely because people assumed he was just another street person in a fabulously rich city where homelessness is somehow a common sight. The person who finally checked on Robert was a homeless person who probably knew all too well the indifference of Paris to people sleeping rough, even in winter.
We keep repeating the same things. Everyone needs access to a life with dignity. We ask for structural reforms which will have real impact on the lives of people living in precarious existence. There has been a disengagement from France regarding the basic social minimums required in life.
Officially, around 6,000 people die on the streets of France each year, but NGOs say the real number is closer to 3,000 people. Refugees, mostly from countries hit by Western military intervention, die out of sight and without identification in tents, pushed into unseen and unlivable corners of the country.
We consider the question of housing to be a vital effort we need to make. We're asking for the basic recognition that everyone needs a roof over their heads. We're asking all the candidates in this spring's election to recognize that a state must take care of people.
Annual budget cuts during the age of austerity have pushed even more poor and mentally ill people into the streets, with evictions exploding so much the government refuses to publish the data anymore. Paris is the most population-dense city in the Western world, but government housing policy favors landlords and not renters. None of these government policy choices really explains the passing of René Robert, but many hope his needless death can change France's indifference towards the plight of those living on the streets. Rami Mazahiri, Paris.
Leading business owners, producers, and entrepreneurs were invited to a special place, Beit Rahbari. That's the official residence of Iran's leader. The meeting was aimed at allowing industrialists to share their concerns and highlight the major challenges they face in the production process with leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, listening and taking notes.
Your Highness, production is always associated with problems. If we want to produce, we need to brace for any possible problems.
I dare say even the world's biggest entrepreneur, Mr. Bill Gates, could not manage a coffee shop under these difficult circumstances. But Iranian producers managed to run their businesses with all the foreign-imposed hardships.
Let's not sacrifice domestic production for imports. I proudly say that our biotech products have the capacity to be exported to other countries if the government lends its support.
At a time when the coronavirus pandemic led many countries to face shortage in medical supplies, Iran faced yet another problem, U.S. sanctions. But thanks to the efforts of our medical producers, we did not face any shortage in medical items during the pandemic.
We are fighting an economic war. We Iranian producers are the economic soldiers. So it's heartwarming when our leader lends his support for us. But it entails practical steps by authorities to make a change.
We got along with sanctions. We learned how to run our businesses despite the sanctions. The only thing we need to do is to modify our domestic regulations in favor of local producers.
Ayatollah Khamenei hailed the efforts of Iranian economic operators in keeping domestic production and the economy afloat amid the toughest sanctions imposed by the U.S. on Iran. He said thanks to those efforts, the U.S.'s so-called maximum pressure campaign against Iran has hit the wall, and that's what American officials have also admitted. Addressing the government officials present in the meeting, Ayatollah Khamenei put major emphasis on the need to avoid tying the economy to the outcome of the ongoing Vienna talks aimed at reviving the 2015 Iran deal. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution believes the ultimate solution to the country's economic problems is to rely on the young minds. As he said, they have proved competent in all areas, from the production of COVID vaccines to precision-guided missiles. It's the second time in almost 2 years that Iran's leader has met with Iranian producers. Ayatollah Khamenei has on different occasions highlighted the need to boost domestic production as the key to resistance economy. To this end, he has taken symbolic and practical measures, including naming the current Persian year the year of production, support, and the elimination of obstacles, calling on authorities to materialize this slogan. Boosting domestic production has been one of the main concerns and priorities of Iran's leader. Today, he once again urged the Iranian government to not wait for the removal of U.S. sanctions to fix the economy, and instead capitalize on local producers, as he believes this is the only way toward a resilient economy that can withstand foreign pressures. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Islamic and national forces in the Gaza Strip held a rally near the separation fence between Gaza and the occupied lands. The rally comes to voice the Palestinian outrage of the Israeli apartheid policies of land grabbing. And Naqab is witnessing a wave of forced displacement by Israel's system of apartheid against all Palestinians. Considering these Israeli attempts to expel thousands of Palestinians from their homes and lands a crime against humanity, Palestinians in the Gaza Strip expressed their support to Palestinians in Al-Naqab, south of the country.
The Israeli regime has stolen our land since 1948. Until this moment, it keeps practicing apartheid attempts to take our lands by force. My words for Palestinians in Al-Naqab is that we will always be supported and we are all united in the face of this aggression.
In their speeches, Palestinian factions stressed that the issue of Al-Naqab is the issue of every Palestinian and they won't sit idle in the face of these illegal crimes.
This event is organized by the national and the Islamic forces in Gaza and all the Palestinian tribesmen in order to express our support to our people in Al-Naqab, who are under the Israeli apartheid policies of land grabbing. Israel wants to expel those people from their lands and homes, and this is unacceptable for us. We are together until breaking the Zionist Bennett, who threatened to build an iron wall around our people in Al-Naqab.
Calling it an ongoing Nakba, hundreds of Palestinian citizens demonstrated in Al-Naqab, while dozens of them were arrested by the Israeli regime. The number of Arab citizens in Al-Naqab is estimated at 300,000, living on 5% of the land, of which they said that Israel had confiscated 95% since 1948. Al-Naqab has seen a dramatic escalation as the Israeli regime intensifies its apartheid policies of seizing the Palestinian lands. Palestinians here stress that Al-Naqab is not alone in this struggle. They also say they won't remain silent in this battle against the Israeli crimes. Ruba Shabit, Gaza.
Mattarella. Mattarella.
After 6 days of failed votes and 8 rounds of ballots, on Saturday the Italian parliament re-elected 80-year-old Sergio Mattarella as president of the republic with 759 votes out of 983 cast by the grand electors. In the days ahead of the election, Mattarella, who has been in office since 2015, had repeatedly said that he didn't want another stint. However, he changed his mind on Saturday afternoon when the leaders of parliamentary groups resorted to him in a desperate attempt to put an end to a political impasse that would erode the nation's credibility. The political stalemate was triggered by parties' disagreement over the candidacy of Prime Minister Draghi to be the next president earlier in the week. In the following days, parties struggled to reach an agreement over an alternative figure, dragging the country on the verge of a political crisis. Commentators have slammed political leaders for their bickering over a consensus candidate. Some have said that not even during a pandemic crisis which has brought the country to its knees, political parties have been able to put aside their differences. Prime Minister Draghi is expected to reshuffle his cabinet as his first move following Mattarella's election. He has to make sure that the 260 billion euros that Italy is receiving from the European Recovery Fund to counter the economic fallout of the COVID-19 crisis are spent effectively. Draghi has committed to 58 reforms and 132 investments over the next 5 years. Max Civili, Rome.
Cheering for Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, thousands of locals in southern Damascus welcomed high-ranking security officers who arrived in Kiswe town to initiate a reconciliation process that would lead to providing amnesty to those wanted by security apparatus during the crisis and implementation of presidential amnesty decrees.
There's an amnesty decree by President Bashar al-Assad today to start a reconciliation campaign in the countryside. Tomorrow, the campaign will cover all Damascus countryside for all misled Syrians. The importance of such a campaign is its contribution in restoring peace.
We conveyed the demands of the people in Damascus countryside for reconciliation to President Assad, who ordered the formation of a security committee that includes the military prosecution and all security apparatus to solve the problems of the people and settle their situation.
Hundreds of wanted people flocked to reconciliation centers to settle their situation. Some had escaped military duty, while others were involved in anti-government acts or were members of armed groups in the past.
We were outlaws. We came to reconcile. We were misled like many Syrians. Everyone makes mistakes. We came today to be on the right track with our homeland thanks to President Assad.
This is the most comprehensive reconciliation deal south of the capital. Over 2,700 individuals had reconciled in southern Damascus since 2016. Thousands more currently have the chance to return to normal life in the next week. The Syrian government has for years prioritized reconciliation deals over military solutions in areas that have witnessed violence throughout the unrest. Such deals lay the foundation for negotiated settlement of the crisis facing the country. Hamad Ali, Damascus Countryside.
Islamic Revolution as role model for Islamic movements. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. Dear listeners, we are in 10 days done, the period marking the victory of the Islamic Revolution in 1979. In the second episode of this series, you are going to hear on the role of the Islamic Revolution in formation of Islamic movements in the region. Stay tuned, please. The 20th century was the century of wars, which were mainly waged by the countries seeking power and subjugation of poor nations. The First World War broke out in 1914 and lasted for 4 years, killing millions of innocent people and devastating many cities and countries. This war set the ground for colonization of the Islamic countries by Western states, mainly Britain and France. Egypt, with its geostrategic situation in the region, was subjugated as a British colony. It was in the same years that Britain issued Balfour Declaration, which was indeed the prelude for fabrication and implantation of the Zionist regime in the heart of the Islamic nations. Although Iran had no role in the outbreak and spread of the war due to its strategic situation and the incompetence and servility of its shahs, turned into the road for commutation of Russian and British military. Hence, Iran was illegally occupied by the British forces till the end of the war in 1918. 21 years later, the Second World War broke out, which lasted for 6 years and resulted in coming to power of Russia and the United States of America as the two superpowers of the world. Again, the share of the Muslim nations was famine, disease, devastation of all infrastructures, pillage of resources, and colonization. The unwanted presence of foreigners in the Islamic countries urged many groups and establishments to come to existence, which sought to save their nations from various imported isms like Marxism, socialism, liberalism, and so on. Most of these groups and establishments were led by religious figures and reformists. Sayyid Jamaluddin Asadabadi was among these figures. He traveled to different Islamic and European countries and tried to impact people from various walks of life. Therefore, colonialists expelled him from Egypt and dissolved his party. Asadabadi was influenced by Shia ulema in Iran and Iraq. In 1952, Jamal Abdel Nasser annulled the royal government through a military coup and continued his struggles against colonialism. Yet his movement was deviated due to excessive pan-Arabic ideas and socialist proclivity in economy. In 1948, concurrent with the invasion of the global Zionism into Palestine and massacre of the children of the land by invaders, Muslims tried to repel the invasion. However, the servility, vassalage, and passivity of Arab governments left no ability and motive for them to defend the Holy Land.